Hi, I'm Emmett Smith. One of the things I believe that hinders our quality of life is having restrictions. When you have physical restrictions, it can actually take a toll on your body, not only your body, but your mind.
Break free from chronic joint pain with regenerative treatments at QC Kinetics. Pain relief without...
Oh boy, yep, this has got some big heavy hitters behind it, like Emmett Smith. You all know that I'm from Dallas, and we moved to College Station in 2015. Emmett Smith is a legend in Dallas Cowboys football and an overall just a great guy. But yep, he is now one of the spokesmen for regenerative medicine, specifically a company called QC Kinetics, not a sponsor. I mean, this thing of regenerative medicine is a big deal. It is definitely hot, and it's definitely marketable across a variety of disciplines. And here it is, everyone, it's equally as controversial. The most widely known type of regenerative medicine that's now in some physicians' offices is the use of platelet-rich plasma. Platelet-rich plasma is not the only type of regenerative medicine. You can also use true stem cells, which is a lot more controversial and a lot harder to get, and definitely has a lot further to go than the PRP version of regenerative medicine. PRP, of course, meaning platelet-rich plasma. Now, if you remember, some time ago, we actually had an episode on platelet-rich plasma as a therapy for ovarian function, whether it was POI or anovulation. You got to go back and listen to that in the archive because the data kind of was all over the place. Are there success stories? Absolutely. Are there still questions that remain? Absolutely. So this has been proposed, of course, this platelet-rich plasma therapy for a variety of things. As Emmett Smith said, it's been used for musculoskeletal pain disorders. And now, of course, it's invaded, and I don't mean that in a bad way, just, well, it's invaded the field of gynecology. Notice, gynecology, not really obstetrics. There's no real obstetrical intervention as of right now, but potentially there's some kind of interest, and there is data that it may be helpful for a variety of GYN applications. And that offering is pretty broad. I mean, it's been used for infertility, for in utero endometrial receptivity, Asherman syndrome, for some types of fistula, for stress incontinence, for heaven's sakes, for pelvic floor prolapse, and even for a variety of ovarian functions like we discussed just a little while ago. So yes, it is pervasive, but it still has a lot of questions, guys. And I love how it's so sexy right now. It's super marketable, as we mentioned, but it's not new at all. I mean, this actually goes back to the 70s, and then things started popping up again in the literature in the late 1990s to the early 2000s. So it's been at least 30 years where it's been in print, and much longer than that, that it's been introduced as a concept. So in this episode, we're going to review this whole idea of regenerative medicine and gynecology, and we're even going to summarize some key points from a brand new narrative review that just came out on this very subject in the Green Journal. That's Obstetrics and Gynecology. Yep, this is literally just days old, and we're going to hit a couple of highlights here. It's really fascinating because outside of the potential medical benefits of this, notice I said potential, it's even made its way into the cosmetic industry, like cosmetic facials. I don't know if you all have heard or not, but wow, there's a big CDC investigation on this because of an N of three. That's right, three women who had platelet-rich plasma as part of their facial therapy. That's called the vampire facial. I'm going to talk about it in this episode. But three women from one location had a significant complication. We're going to talk about it as well. All right, everybody, grab your favorite platelet-rich plasma product and have a seat because we're going to talk about regenerative medicine and gynecology. Here we go. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls. Okay, let me just say it right off the bat. I'm definitely not throwing anybody who's doing this in their practice because it is pretty darn sexy. It's a great way to increase patient pass-through. I get that. And if you believe in it, you know, hey, kudos to you. And honestly, guys, I got to be honest. I think this is pretty cool. The biological premise, the plausibility of this working is legit. Okay, I mean, we get that. We know that platelet-rich plasma, and we're going to talk about why is it even platelets? Why is platelets a thing here? Why isn't it just not the plasma by itself? Why isn't it not platelet-free plasma? Why platelet-rich? Well, the short answer, of course, is because it's the platelets that carry a lot of the activation substances that get activated to help with this regeneration. So let me be very clear. Is it biologically plausible that using this kind of regenerative medicine, the cell-based approach, because platelets, of course, are a cell, is this possible that this could actually have health benefits? Absolutely. And I'm not questioning that at all. Yes, this has the biological plausibility to help. And in small case reports and case series, it seems to help. The issue here and the conundrum and the hindrance is, wow, there's like a bunch of ways to do this, to prepare it, to actually purify it. And there's been proposed classification systems to try to help with this. And the truth is, it's just very varied right now. And it has been for 30 years. And that's one of mainstream medicine's problem with this, which is there's no standardization. It's hard to tell what actually worked versus a temporary effect of pro-inflammatory response just because you inject something to an area. So it's very, very complicated. There's actually been sham studies like injecting saline, for example, into ovarian cortex. And wow, lo and behold, it kind of spruces up activity for a little bit because it's a stress response to the organ. So there is controversy in this, even though there is a biological plausibility. This makes sense. It should work. But there's a lot of questions still. Is it just platelets? What's the concentration of platelets that you use? Do you activate the platelets? Does it include some leukocytes? Because giving one person leukocytes to another is highly problematic, right? That's where you can get a host versus graft reaction. You can get a immune flare. You can get a rejection, a picture. That's why we do, when we give blood products, we give what? Leukocyte reduced red blood cell transfusion, right? Leukocyte reduced. So we would never want to give leukocytes from one patient to the other. Even if for a cancer treatment, you do bone marrow transplantation, which is a whole other type of regenerative medicine. Yes, bone marrow transplant is one of the most well-known types of regenerative medicine. It's cell-based therapy. It's exactly what it is. So when somebody asked, when I did that podcast on the regenerative medicine and ovarian function, I got a couple of comments. One was, hey, I actually had a family member that did this and it worked overseas. So to which I replied, fantastic. That's great. I wish it would work for everybody. And if it did, this would be the, without doubt, first-line treatment for POI, and it's not, okay? So if it worked, fantastic. Doesn't mean it works for everybody. And you see, this is the caveats here, is what is the degree of preparation for this? Is it, what's the degree of leukocytes that you put into that? Do you put other kind of pro-inflammatory healing cells like monocytes into that? It's a lot of wild, wild west, even though the concept is pretty darn old, okay? But the reason that it's so attractive outside of the potential health benefits for a variety of things, which is always a flag, right? Whenever you have one potion that can fix a variety of things from your aching bones to your infertility to your fistula, it should kind of make you pause and go, possible, for sure. But wow, is that too magic potion-y to actually be true? And the truth is we still don't know, despite all of the years of data that we have, all right? So I do want to be very clear here. Are there publications that show that this has worked? Yes. Is this absolutely ready for prime time? Well, let me answer that question with a question. Does ACOG or the AUA or AUGS, American Urogen Society, do they include this as a treatment for fistula as first line? No. Now, they talk about it like, hey, potentially with some more research, but it's definitely not first line. Or what about for Asherman's? Is the primary first line treatment of Asherman's removal of the Senechier and then an injection or infusion of platelet-rich plasma? No, it's not. They talk about it, but it's definitely not first line. So the reason it's not first line yet is because questions remain. So when I saw this new narrative review from the Green Journal that literally, guys, came out like days ago, just at the end of April 2024, I was like, all right, let's see what I was hoping when I saw the title, which is Regenerative Medicine and Gynecology. I'm like, oh, man, are we all in? I mean, are we like, did we say, hey, I'm definitely putting my money down on the farm and I'm buying that farm? No, it doesn't really say that. It says, what, and we're going to get into it, hey, this is super cool. It's pretty promising. Man, this could fix a lot of things. But are we really ready for prime time? Probably not. I am going to get into all this, okay? So we've talked about this before in previous podcasts, as I've mentioned. And as a concept, because I love how, you know, Emmett Smith comes out like, oh, guess what we have now, guys? Well, it's not that we have it now. We've got easier techniques now where it can be done in a physician's own office. Because before it was all research-based. Man, you can buy these kits. You can put this into your office. I know people who have them in their office and are very successful at it. But the results are varied, okay? Because what started out as a proposal like a long time ago is now being able to be made more accurate and being put into physicians' offices, okay? But this specific term of platelet-rich plasma, okay, PRP, is nothing new. It can be traced back to the 1970s when people actually found, hey, wow, there's some type of platelets that are super concentrated when you, if you just centrifuge out the blood in the plasma. And then when they did that further testing, they're like, hey, you know what? If we activate these, it can release growth factors. It's got some fibroblast activity, and it can kind of help regenerate normal healing. Hence the term regenerative medicine. Okay. And of course, super appealing because you can do it in the office. It is pretty lucrative, let's just say it. And if it works, patients are happy. And above all that, you really don't have any kind of real risk outside of the potential pain on the injection site, because this is coming from the same person, right? It's not being done by an outside donor. It is autologous. I mean, so you're taking it from your own body and then putting it into your own body. So the chance of immune reaction, like zero chance of transmitting a foreign infection into yourself. Well, it came from you, so you probably already had it. So that's likely not the issue here, okay? When I mentioned earlier that the CDC is investigating an N of three from a unlicensed spa that was out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, it dealt with this type of procedure, okay, this concept, because this clinic that's now closed was doing what's called the vampire facial. Okay, do y'all know what this is? Now, guys, I've not had it. I've read about it, and I knew that it's been the thing, but no personal experience, okay? And they draw the client's blood, get platelet-rich plasma, and then basically through microneedling, inject it into the skin. Because, well, why not, right? I mean, shoot, works for your joints, should work for your skin. And after the initial pain and inflammation go away, the idea is wrinkles go away, it lasts like up to a year, or in some reports, 18 months. Basically, it's a type of biological filler that's coming from your own body, okay? Well, the CDC got involved because there were three presumably HIV infections from this procedure. So I want to be very clear. It's not that like they drew it from themselves and then they got HIV and then they were later diagnosed and they've already had it. No. Somehow this was in the needling process itself with the equipment. So somebody had it first. They were contaminated. They were not well cleaned. And then as the story goes, as CDC is still investigating, there has been 3 reports of presumably HIV transmission after receiving this vampire facial due to infected material, okay? Now, just letting you know how recent this is, like this story came out like April 26th, okay? So I'm doing this April 27th, may finish it on April 28th because it's kind of late and I got lots to cover and I'm not sure if I'm going to get to it all today. But the idea is this is at the end of April, the CDC has opened an investigation which may just ex-nay the whole concept of vampire facial when it's not really the procedure itself. It's probably was poor technique. Okay, but you can look that up on the CDC website. It has made a pretty much national news. It was on CBS. It was on NBC. So just be aware that when I say it's relatively safe, if you clean the devices correctly, it's relatively safe, but not so much for this N of 3. If this was the case, if they got HIV from this, oh my gosh. I mean, yikes. So all to say, because I did say it's relatively safe, that's if it's done correctly and it's not cross-contaminated with somebody else. But yes, vampire facials are a type of platelet-rich plasma therapy, which is basically what we're talking about here. It's a type of regenerative medicine, not so much to regenerate something in the face, but as a type of filler. This is what we've become. All right, I think that's enough of the vampire facial. Ah, here it is, April 25th, 2024. I said it came out on the 26th. Sorry, I was a day off. This is on the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. I know I said I was done with the vampire facial thing, but I had to correct that. And the title of this MMWR report from the CDC from April the 25th is Investigation of Presumptive HIV Transmission Associated with Receipt of Platelet-Rich Plasma Microneedling Facials at a Spa Among Former Spa Clients in New Mexico. This actually spanned 2018 to 2023. Just wanted to clarify that. I'll put the link, of course, on our reference list, but it's a simple Google search from the CDC MMWR, HIV transmission with microneedling facial using platelet-rich plasma. As we move on, one of the things that my brain automatically wants to say whenever we're talking about regenerative medicine and platelet-rich plasma, PRP, please be patient with me if I call this thing reversed as RPR. That's where my brain goes to. I don't know if it does for you, but every time I see something with platelet-rich plasma with its abbreviation of PRP, my brain just goes to RPR. No, I don't have dyslexia. It's just I'm so used to, using RPR and not really PRP. Anyway, if I ever say RPR, I'm super conscious of it right now for this episode because that's not what we're talking about. Just go with it. The topic is not syphilis. It is platelet-rich plasma. Ooh, my goodness. Now, before we get into the review from the Green Journal, if you listen to one of our last episodes with Dr. Taylor Apley, one of our residents, we talked about it was a kind of a myth busting thing. And I mentioned we're talking about like pheromones and stuff like that, biological signaling. And I said, of course, there's some perfumes and some colognes that, try to put this out there, put pheromones in it, or at least that's the vibe. And I said, like the commercial for Sauvage. And I got a message from somebody in Quebec. And they're like, I lost it on the Sauvage thing. I know what Sauvage is, but what is it? Is there a specific commercial like that? Or what? Where was that coming from? And I'm like, oh, my goodness, seriously? I thought this thing was like international. Is that just in the U.S.? I'm like, I can't resist. I've got to do a quick thing on Sauvage. It's too good not to. So just for you in Quebec, here you go.
In the wilderness.
Ooh, in the wilderness.
Fearless.
Yeah, gotta be fearless.
And human.
And human.
Sauvage. The new elixir. Dior.
Dior. Sauvage. not a sponsor. How great is that? It has nothing to do with what we're talking about. And it's not like I watched that commercial. I'm like, oh, I know exactly what that smells like now. What? What does that smell like? Like sweaty, you're digging in the dirt? What? I don't understand. That has nothing to do with our topic and nothing to do with the cologne, I think. But anyway, so there you go to our podcast family member in Quebec. You'll never get those 30 seconds back, but that's what I referenced in the last episode about Sauvage. Okay, back on track. Believe me when I tell you that this is making its rounds in published literature. I mean, wow, it's just so varied. And again, there's evidence for this. But if you read all of the big reviews, whether they're narrative reviews or systematic reviews, like the one that came out January 2024 in the International Journal of Reproductive Biomedical Work, the title was Role of Platelet-Rich Plasma in Pelvic Floor Disorders, a Systematic Review. Yes, this was for a variety of pelvic floor issues, including stress urinary incontinence and even sexual dysfunction, believe it or not. They're like, hey, this probably has some benefit here, but they're always have the same safety net, okay? They always drop the little bomb at the end. We're like, hey, this is promising results. I think there's something here. However, the quality of the evidence was low to moderate. There's a lot of study heterogeneity. We're not really sure what they used, not sure how they really prepared it. So its reproducibility is kind of unclear. Ugh. So they kind of cover both sides. Yes, there is some data here and it looks like it works. I want this to work, guys. Just to be clear, I want this to work. But there's still a lot of questions. And the main thing is uniformity. There's got to be a way to keep it uniform, reproducible. And that's one of the points that's made in the narrative review, which we're going to talk about. Because it's just not there. But yes, in January 2024, there was a systematic review on the use of platelet-rich plasma for pelvic floor disorders. And man, I mean, when you talk about some, you know, various applications, well, there you go. This was a study, again, a systematic review that used 15 articles that were, again, moderate to good quality, but there's a lot of heterogeneity in this. A total of 600 women were evaluated. 164 had sexual dysfunction. One had pain with urination. Probably should be checked for UTI, but whatever. 20 with vulvovaginal atrophy. 179 with SUI. 16 had recurrent vesicovaginal fistula. Man. And then 210 had a perineal rupture, and then 10 had pelvic organ prolapse. So let me just, do y'all see how broad this is? So remember, I really do want this to work, guys. This has biological plausibility. However, doesn't that seem a little snake oilish? Hey, you got sexual dysfunction? Come right this way. You got pain with urination? I got something for you. You got a recurrent vesicovaginal fistula? Platelet-rich plasma it is. I mean, if there's one thing that can fix everything, you got to scratch your head. Again, I think that the mechanics and the biological principle is there. Platelets with their activation and their regenerative cytokines, their ability to recruit for new blood vessels for angiogenesis, all of that's legit. But are we really there for main line medicine? Probably not, okay? So as this systematic review from January said, look, we definitely have some data here. It seems to be really encouraging, but quote, investigators recommend a clinical trial with standard preparations, standard administration, and standard regimens to establish clinical efficacy, end quote. Y'all get that? They're like, hey, it looks like it works, but it's so heterogeneous in what was actually called platelet-rich plasma, hard to really say let's all go into this. And remember, still, there's not one true guidance here that says first line is PRP. Second line is traditional surgical stuff and traditional medicine. But first, go to platelet-rich plasma. I think it's something to consider when things fail, if we're out of our wits' end, if there's a reputable way to do it and a clinic has good outcomes, then perhaps try that. Okay, I'm not saying that this should not be done. I'm saying there's questions that remain. So I'm gonna be very clear. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I got a buddy who's a good friend who does this in another state. And he's like, man, the patients like it. Well, of course they like it. I mean, because they're getting something. And there's a huge placebo effect. I'm not saying that it does or it doesn't. I'm just saying that we need standardization. Okay. So anyway, there is data across a variety of platforms. I don't want to go into each one because let me just get to this new narrative review, which is not just focused on platelet-rich plasma. It's focused on regenerative medicine because it also goes into stem cell therapy, which is definitely a whole other ball of wax and controversial because anytime you get stem cells, that has other regulation and ethical issues. And that truly should work because it's potentially introducing totipotential cells. And I don't want to get into that much, all right? Because there's a lot, much more controversy with stem cells. There's already uncertainties and controversy with platelet-rich plasma. We'll kick that up a notch for stem cells. But both of these are called cell-based therapies for regenerative medicine. They are not the only ones. They also have something like scaffold interventions, which I'm not going to get into. That's a whole other issue for hernias or for fistula repair. But what most people can, like tomorrow, you can probably order a kit, talk to some rep, and get a platelet-rich plasma a system in the office. But this is what ACOG is trying to say here in this narrative review, or at least the authors, sorry, not ACOG, the authors of this, which was Julia Ballo and Pamela Moylai, who kind of gave this little cautionary tale here. I want to say it again, just to be clear, this is not an ACOG guidance. This is not an ACOG practice alert. This is a narrative review by two authors in the Green Journal. So I just want to be very clear because I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying here. This is not an ACOG stance. It's just a good publication that came out literally, like I think maybe 3 days ago, ahead of print. Hasn't even officially come out yet, okay? But focusing on platelet-rich plasma, let me just give you their take-home message here. Quote, although platelet-rich plasma treatment is promising in promoting tissue biostimulation. So let's just stop there. Where do you think this is going to go? Okay, so now they get into a lot more. They have some data in it, data, yada, yada. But quote, although platelet-rich plasma treatment is promising in promoting tissue biostimulation. Do you think they're going to say we should wait for another week to incorporate this across gynecology or wait for 2025 and then start it? Yeah, it's probably not going to go there. Anytime it starts with although, here comes the pumping of the brakes. Y'all get it, okay? So let's continue the rest of the sentence. Although platelet-rich plasma treatment is promising in promoting tissue biostimulation, there are many limitations to adopting platelet-rich plasma use, including what we've already said, a lack of standardization of preparation techniques, and an absence, here it is, guys, here's a take-home message, an absence of definitive benefits derived from prospective randomized clinical trials, end quote. So, not to say that there's not promising stuff. That's exactly how they start the sentence. Yeah, we've got promising results here. Questions remain. Do they have some leukocytes in it? What about monocytes? How much platelets do you need? What makes the plasma platelet rich? Is it a 25% concentration? Is it 30? Is it 70? Is it 80? I don't know, because that's one of the issues here. Again, I do want this to work. I think it can work. I just think there's a lot of questions that remain. And as they finish this section on platelet-rich plasma, they finish with this last sentence, quote, additional studies are needed to demonstrate whether patient-specific factors affect platelet-rich plasma quality, composition, and clinical outcomes, end quote. In other words, questions remain. This whole dilemma of heterogeneity and preparation that these two authors are making in this narrative review is nothing new. I'm looking at a publication right now from 2019 in the OBGYN International Journal. That's what it's called. The title is The Use of Platelet-Rich Plasma in the Gynecological Setting, a Review. Okay, so 2019, So what, 5 years ago? 5 years ago, guys. And despite its increased adoption in the clinical practice, listen to what was said in their conclusion in 2019 and how it echoes this new publication in 2024. Okay, so these authors, after they review all the different applications, again, from thin endometrium to sexual dysfunction to ovarian use to cervical ectropion, why would we need to necessarily treat that unless it's contact bleeding? I mean, do you see what I'm saying? It's so broad that, yes, the biological premise is there, but is this kind of a cure-all? So this is what these authors, after their little review from 2019, stated. And look how it's almost the exact same echo that we just read from 2024 April, okay? So these authors stated in 2019, quote, PRP is a simple, efficient, and minimally invasive method for obtaining a natural concentration of autologous growth factors and biologically active molecules with strong potential to improve tissue healing and promote regeneration. End quote. Okay, hey, all of that sounds great. So what's the dilemma? Well, they go on to say, quote, heterogeneous processing methods, the lack of standardization, and a lack of uniform nomenclature for this make interpretation of the literature regarding the clinical effectiveness challenging. They go on to say, the employment of regenerative medicine approaches will continue to grow in the gynecological setting, and future trials should be carefully designed in order to facilitate the clinical translation. End quote. Well, that was said in 2019, and here we are in April 2024 with the exact same message. So what has changed? Well, increased adoption. We have increased application, but we're still saying the same thing. I think this could work. It sounds like it does, but everyone is doing different things. Joe Schmo's PRP could be different than Joe Schmo over here. No offense to somebody who's listening. Their name is actually Joe Schmo. I just made that up. Okay. The point is, I'm not sure what they're actually doing. Now, the kits, the processes can be the end. The little preparation methods can be the same. But there's no quality care, quality assertion that's being done here, quality assurance to make sure that there's a uniformity here. So that's the issue. Again, the same argument that we just read from this month, April 2024, was stated back in 2019. Well, there are some contraindications to do this, and that's not really talked about that much. You're like, well, who shouldn't get it? Well, first of all, if you've got some kind of a bleeding disorder, please don't just electively start taking aliquots of blood from you to purify the platelets and put that back into your skin or into your joints. I mean, that's probably not a good idea. But in general, this procedure is not recommended for patients with coagulation disorders, breastfeeding. Now, I'm not sure why breastfeeding is listed as a contraindication, except that it's not studied in breastfeeding women yet, but it's your own body. So if you take blood out, you kind of concentrate some platelet, little platelet juice, and then stick it back in. Why would breastfeeding be a contraindication? I don't know. But it's listed because nobody wants to touch a lactating woman, okay, in clinical research. So because it's not studied, it's considered a contraindication. Pregnancy right now, this is XNA. Even though it's taking your own blood and kind of putting it back in, the idea is women are already anemic. Let's not give them bloodletting experiments for some other purpose, okay? Plus, things like musculoskeletal disorders or whatever need to be properly investigated, not treated with regenerative medicine in pregnancy. Of course, if you've got some kind of cancer, that typically is no-go. And here's something interesting that I saw in one narrative review. The use of chronic non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs is considered no-go. Why that's the case? Yeah. I'm not sure. Some studies say it doesn't work. Others say there's questions that remain, but it is what it is. Podcast families, we get ready to wrap this up. I want to leave you with a similar message from last year, actually just last fall, from October 2023, from Curious, the online publication, dealing with the exact same issues that we've just covered. Okay, the title was Current Status and Advancements in Platelet-Rich Plasma Therapy. So exactly our topic here. And after they go through the entire list of potential uses, of course, mainly focusing on orthopedic injury, but then moving into wound healing and gynecology, they leave it with this final message, quote, "This is an exciting era for regenerative medicine with PRP as the forerunner, as the understanding and utilization of PRP continues to advance. PRP is a promising conservative treatment modality for a variety of conditions with healing and regenerative capabilities and clear evidence of safety." That's all the good stuff, okay? And then they wrap it up with the exact same thing that we just covered, both from 2019 and then from this month, April 2024. The authors go on to say, quote, "The heterogeneity of PRP preparations, the heterogeneity of outcome measures, and the heterogeneity of study designs," here it is, "has made interpreting clinical literature difficult and limits the ability to make treatment recommendations." See, it's the exact same message from 2019, this month, April 2024, and this was in the fall of 2023. All right. Yes, I think this has a role eventually. I think this is going to get better and better, even though it's been around for like 30 years. But it will improve. And at one point, if we can get the protocols uniform, that's where the clinical utility will come from. All right. Now that we've wrapped it up, let's bring it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.